if you were to look at how many phone calls you make, I don't care if you call them cold calls or warm calls, you look at how many calls you're making on a regular basis and how many of them actually wind up turning into an appointment, that number is going to be pretty low, right? I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to acknowledge that. Well, if you were to look at how many emails that you send out, and you look at how many of them even get a response from the people that you're trying to get in front of, it's pretty low. And you look at the responses that you're getting, and you're getting a lot of not interesteds. So today I thought it might be really valuable to talk about how you can have a more effective prospecting dialogue. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host of the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. It's funny because there's all kinds of studies and statistics that are out there. And lately, I've read a lot of things about cold calling and how ineffective it is. And depending on who you want to believe, I know that there was a study that was done by IBM. And I believe that they found that it was like 97% of the cold calls we make end in failure. And LeapJob, and the reason why I said I believe it was IBM, I might be mixing up the companies here because I know one of them put it at like 97%, the other one came in at 98%. I believe LeapJob came in at about 98% that they found were ineffective and ended in failure. You see, the problem with statistics like that is that, I mean, first of all, you can use them any which way, right, to kind of further your cause or make your case or whatever. And I believe those statistics, by the way, because I pick up the phone each and every day, except I have a little bit of a different result than what they're putting out there. It doesn't mean that they're wrong, but I think what we're forgetting to take into account is how people are going about their prospecting. Now, this isn't just a phone thing. We could talk about emails. Every company, when I first start working with them, whether it be on a consulting basis, a training basis, whether we're doing one-on-one sales coaching, one of the things that always comes up is just the fact that they're not getting responses to their emails. And when they do get responses, it's thanks but no thanks, or remove me from your list. Again, it's resulting in failure. So again, what we're really not looking at here, we tend to blame the venue when things like that happen. Like, well, that's cold calls for you, right? I mean, of course. I mean, you know, cold calling is dead. Of course, it would be 97, 98% failure rate. Emails, well, of course, that's emails. That's the noisiest like channel there is. But we're failing to look at what the individuals are doing to bring on the failure and how they're going about things and their skill level. So today I thought it would be really valuable for us to talk about just a few simple things that could radically like tip the scales in your favor, right? Wouldn't that be like a cool thing to do, especially if we're really not talking about complicated things here that you need to do? So let us put on our Captain Obvious cape today and begin. The very first thing, I don't care if you're calling someone. I don't care if you're emailing them. I don't care if you're using snail mail. I don't care if you're using LinkedIn. All the things that I'm talking about today are across multiple forms of outreach, which is what you should have in your arsenal, by the way. You should not be relying on any one type of outreach. And right about now is when I'll like hear all kinds of like pissing and moaning from people. And it's like, yeah, but Paul, I prefer the phone. But Paul, I prefer social selling. But Paul, I prefer like knocking on doors and dropping in. But Paul, I prefer networking because I'm really a powerful networker. But Paul, I prefer, you know, like content marketing and stuff. And here is my really blunt response to that. And I just want to give you a moment in case bad language happens to offend you, like you've never like moseyed by my podcast before. I want to give you an opportunity, like put the earmuffs on if bad language like bothers you, because I'm going to be really explicit right now. I won't be so explicit that I use the F curse, but here goes. When you say things to me like I prefer, I feel a need to remind you that nobody gives a shit what you prefer. Let me say that again for those in like the cheap seats. Nobody gives a shit what you prefer. Well, listen, hey, I'm your buddy. I care. Ray, your Uncle Paul cares. I love you, man. Of course I care. But I'm just telling you, those people you're trying to get a hold of, they could give a shit what you prefer. They're not sitting. Do you think they're sitting around their business right now saying, I wonder how I will respond to people trying to sell me shit today? Should I, you know, I know that Jake prefers the phone, so I'm going to answer the phone because that's what Jake wants. Or, you know, no, actually, you know what? I think I am going to only respond to people on LinkedIn because I know that's what Mary prefers, and I give a shit what Mary thinks, right? So nobody cares about what you think, what you prefer, what works best for you. They care that you show up on the venue and in the manner that suits them well. This is my argument for the people out there, and I see it all the time on LinkedIn, and it absolutely like just sickens my stomach when I see these quote-unquote thought leaders like putting this argument out there, the cold call versus social selling. And it should never be one versus the other. We need it all, folks. Seriously, we need it all for the simple reason that the people that you and I are trying to get in front of, they're all different people. Every one of them has different preferences. You're going to meet people who prefer text messages. You're going to have other people that everything for them, man, they got to have a conversation. It's not email. And we can go on and on and on. And as a sales professional, you and I need options. We don't need limitations or stupid limiting rules because some old school sales guru told you so or whatever it is. You need every damn option possible. If you want to win this game, you want a fighting chance, you need it all. And I always talk, like, I mean, to the point of beating the shit out of this point. I always talk about like a scene from, you know, there are some movies out there that are just, they're bad movies. Like you feel like kind of silly citing a quote like from a like kind of a bad movie, but then again it was actually a, like to me, I liked the movie. I don't know if you guys remember that movie Mobsters, and it really told the story of like Meyer Lansky and Lucky Luciano, and it had like a young Patrick Dempsey in it and Christian Slater, and I enjoyed the movie. I'm sorry, like I'm a sucker for a bad movie, but what I really like is that there was a scene in the movie where Lucky Luciano comes across, I want to say Meyer Lansky. I guess it was some other guy. And I always forget his damn name, man. And I'm really big on these movies. Like, I feel so bad forgetting his name. But whatever. I mean, not like he's alive and he's going to say, Castain, how dare you forget my name? The guy's been dead, like, I don't know, about 75 years or some shit. But anyway. Anyway, he, and I will say anyway yet a third time, but there was one scene when they come across this guy, and it was Rothstein, whatever the hell his name was, Rothstein, and Lucky Luciano and him, they meet for the first time, and Rothstein says to him, listen, you know, pop quiz, you're going down the street, you notice that there is a gunman reaching for his gun. Before you have a chance to react, you notice a second gunman. Who do you kill? And he cuts him off. Like, the guy is going to say to him, who do you kill first? And Lucky Luciano cuts him off, and he says, I reject the question. Or something like, you know, I don't accept the question. For me to survive, I need to kill them both. There's just no right answer. You know, there's no way that I'm going to hit this guy first because he looks like more of a badass. If he's going to survive, he's got to take them both out. Period. To me, that shitty question that people going around asking, like, what's more effective, the cold call or social selling? It's usually brought about by somebody who wants to get everybody's blood boiling and they want lots of comments over on LinkedIn. Seriously, that's about all that stupid question is good for. But to me, in order for me to survive, right? And I'm not just here to survive. I actually want to thrive. Imagine that. So imagine for us to, like, at a minimum, survive. And ideally survive, we need it all. So, having said that, let's get down to some things. Now that I've gone on like a 10-minute freaking rant about movies and useless shit here, let's talk about some useful stuff. So, if you really want to have a more effective prospecting dialogue, really on any venue, the very first thing that you need to do is begin that interaction with something about the other person, that person that you're trying to talk with or get an email response from or get them to call you back or whatever. Lead with something about them instead of something about you and your company. And this right here is something that I talk about an awful lot, because what happens a lot of the time, think about an email, right? Usually the email starts off with, you know, and I hate this when people start off this way. I mean, here it goes again. Like, I'm sounding like I'm very angry today, but I'm really not. I'm actually in a great mood, but here goes. I mean, yeah, like, these emails will start off with, you know, my name is Paul Castain, and I'm with Castain Training Systems, and we're a full service, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I'm starting off with a subject that I'm pretty confident that they really don't care about. Just like we said before, they don't care what venue I prefer. They really don't care that I'm with Castain Training Systems and we're a full service. I don't even know what the hell full service is, to be honest with you. I just know it's a used and abused marketing term. So that's one thing. And most of them start off in a similar fashion. When people call up on the phone, they'll be like, hey, Todd, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. We're a full service training company, right? And like, I'm hesitating here because I never start my calls off that way. It's horrible. So instead of doing, and by the way, I would have to tell you, probably 98% of the calls and emails and any kind of interaction that buyers are getting starts off in a similar way. And I don't mean just using the phrase full service. I mean leading with something about you instead of something about them. And it goes back to the old saying, what's everybody's favorite subject, right? It's them. It's themselves. It's not you. It's their world. It's their company. It's their problems. It's their opportunities that they want to talk about. So if you want to dramatically get somebody's attention, pretty much from the word hello, and let's take a time out on that. I think it's safe to say that we'd all agree that we have to get their attention from the word hello. They are inundated with so much noise and so many things going on. They're crazy busy that if we don't get them right away, it's almost like we've taken a bullet in the first sentence and we're probably not going to die for about another 20 to 30 seconds later. So why take the damn bullet? So we're going to start off with something about them. Now, when I say start off with something about them, this includes your subject lines, your opening statements in emails, also your opening statements in snail mail, when you call, when you reach out to them on LinkedIn, that type of thing. So don't just think call or don't just think email here. I mean, anytime you're going to use an opening statement, lead with something about them. This right here, ladies and gentlemen, is reason number like 10,000 why we research before we pick up a phone, before we reach out on LinkedIn, before we drop in, before, you know, all these things, before we do any of that stuff, we want to take some time to do the research. So the very first way that you're going to have a more effective prospecting dialogue is to lead with something about them. If you ever want to talk about something coming so close to that, you had me at hello, here it is. Seriously, here it is. You will be a breath of fresh air because I'm telling you, as a business owner, I never get anything that leads with me. Ask the buyers in your company, just out of curiosity, the emails that you get, the cold calls that you get, how many of them start off by talking about something you legitimately give a shit about? Ask your boss that too. Like, go to, like, if you're able to get access to, like, a C-level person at your company, ask them that question. How many of the things that you receive or the phone calls you get or maybe any kind of things that you get through LinkedIn start off with a subject that you actually give a shit about instead of them talking about themselves and how great they are and their widget and all that, like, marketing speak stuff. So that's number one. Number two, when it's time for you to talk about your company, there's some things that you need to do. There's actually a lot of things that you need to do, but I just want to give you some ones today that you're going to probably say, possibly nod your head, yeah, I know that, but, like, sadly, you might actually not be doing it. So everything that you say really needs to pass the so what test. And I think the problem is that many of us are just so used to saying something when it comes to the pitch, if you will, that we just, like, it's lost a little bit of its luster. Like, maybe we're not even believing what we're saying. But again, we're just so used to saying it. So let me give you some examples of some things that used to be said with companies that I worked for. I actually worked with a security company. And I did some consulting work for them a long, long time ago, man. It had to be about 15 years ago. And they were telling their sales reps, I mean, like, to the point of, like, hypnotizing them to say, talk about our fleet of security cars. Talk about it. When I asked people why, nobody knew, including upper management. They did not know. And, like, the smartass in me was like, and I remember saying this to them, and they weren't too happy. And I said, so wait a minute, this fleet of security cars you have, right? Do they, like, turn into some kind of, like, transformer? And, like, when people are doing, like, crazy shit, it can, like, vaporize the piss out of them with, like, laser beams or something? Like, who gives a shit about your fleet of cars? Like, why should I care about that if I'm a potential client? And, you know, like, all, like, sarcasm aside and everything else, really what I'm trying to drive at is, you know, can this pass the so what test? And it couldn't. Nobody could explain it, but yet everyone knew that they were supposed to be saying that. Does that sound familiar to you? Have you ever experienced that in a company that you've worked for? It's like, yeah, make sure you talk about this. Why? Like, maybe you didn't even say why, but you know damn well if you asked it, like, nobody would be able to tell you. But you know damn well you had better say it. And you're going to get graded on that when your boss comes out in the field. Like, why didn't you talk about the fleet of cars? Oh, yeah, like, I left him this little toy transformer. I thought that's what you meant, right? Because, like, I think I'd give more shit, you know, of a shit about a little toy than some stupid statement that, like, doesn't, like, mean anything to anybody. So that was one. The other one was with the company that I used to work for before I started Castain Training Systems. When I was in the printing industry and I worked for Consolidated Graphics, CGX, awesome company, by the way, and everybody was going around, they were told to talk about the power of scale. And they said it all the time. I remember when I was meeting with people for, like, the first time and, you know, tell me about the company, and I'd ask for kind of like their elevator pitch and all this kind of stuff. I'd always hear the catchphrase as if they were saying it because they know they're going to get graded on it. They would talk, like, about the power of scale, but nobody could articulate the power of scale. Nobody could tell me why I should give a shit about the power of scale. So I'm just throwing that out there, because it just might be something that, like, you guys are doing similar things and you just haven't, like, really looked at it. So a few questions that play into this and really have to do with, like, you know, the security company and the power of scale and perhaps things that you're saying. So there are a few questions that play into the so what test. So one of the questions you should be asking yourself, like, when it comes to what you've been told to say about your company and what you've been saying about the company, what problems do we actually solve? And you can't just stop there, because salespeople love to talk about finding the pain and we fix the pain and here's how we, you know, like make the pain go away. Yes, that is a very big part of sales, but please understand there's also an opportunity. There's an opportunity part of that conversation. Not everyone has pain, by the way. I don't care what anybody has told you or force-fed you. Not everyone has had pain. And if you think I'm kidding, I want you to think back to those conversations you've had with people when you focus too much on pain, and you didn't talk about opportunities, you asked so many questions about pain, you asked none about potential opportunities, and what happened when you left when they had no pain? And you didn't ask about opportunity, you left with shit, right? You left with empty pockets, and P.S., you didn't serve the person that you were there to serve because you were so fixated on pain, and pain does not exist in every situation. Granted, and I don't mean to be sick here, I would rather deal with somebody experiencing some pain because, you know, I mean, if you look at the catalyst for change, it's being in pain. That's the number one reason why people change things. When you're nice and comfy, not so much. So I would rather find things that people deem painful, just doesn't always exist. So again, when we're doing the so what test, it's not just so what, or, you know, can I say so what to this? Yeah, I can. Well, I probably shouldn't be saying it. Well, there's other things that go into it. What problems do we solve? What opportunities do we help them embrace? Also, I think every once in a while, you really have to step back and just ask yourself, why are we saying what we're saying? Is there a compelling reason here? Does it lead somewhere? Is it serving all the parties involved in this? If it's not, well, maybe it's time to reconsider what you're saying. Also, you know, is it maybe time for something else? I mean, is there something better or stronger that we could be discussing? Also, too, and forgive me again, I'm keeping my Captain Obvious cape on today. This is obvious stuff that we'll all say, duh, that's sales 101. Castain, that's basic. That's shit I learned like when I was at this like 5 minutes. Yeah, but are you doing it? That's really like the conversations we have to be having with ourselves if we're going to be humble students of sales. We all know lots of things, but we're not doing half of the stuff that we'd love to tell people that we know. So the last thing that I would say is that have we asked our existing clients what they find valuable? See, when you talk about value propositions, many times value propositions, I'm not saying every time, so I don't want any of the marketing people to get their panties in a bunch right now, but many times a value proposition was created in a boardroom somewhere or in an office, far removed from the day-to-day true value of the widget. So really, if you want to remain relevant, ask your existing clients why they're buying from you. Ask what they find valuable. I mean, if we had asked that question with the fleet of cars, I'm pretty sure that people wouldn't have said the fleet of cars. And if they did tell us that it was the fleet of cars, not only would it be right from the proverbial horse's mouth, now that we know that everybody's saying that, but now you could ask, hey, just out of curiosity, how is that valuable to you? So that you could break that down for me so we could do more of that. And then somebody may tell you something about your product that, or your service, certainly your solution, that it was just too close to your face for you to ever realize was valuable. But so when we talk about value propositions and talking about what is going to be valuable to other people, well, why not find out what, like, people who already are like buying from you, like, what do they find valuable? So now the other part of this, that, and it goes back to the examples I was giving you where we were talking about the fleet of cars, also the power of scale. Hell, I mean, I worked for a franchise company and they told us to talk about the franchise concept, they called it. The franchise concept. That is our key differentiator. Talk about that. Well, when I ran a team of sales reps in the franchise industry for the company that told us, hey, you, in fact, actually, it goes back before then when I was a sales rep in that company before I was promoted, I really had the balls to say, well, what is it about the franchise concept that is just so effing good that you want us to run around saying it? And somebody broke it down for me. Nobody had ever done that. None of us were taught how to break it down. So I took the way that they were saying it, and no disrespect for them, I didn't like how they broke it down. I grasped it, but I realized, okay, this is truly a good, like, value proposition to put out there. This is something we should be talking up, it is a key differentiator. Otherwise, we're one of God knows how many janitorial companies that were out there, building services companies, maintenance companies. We want it to be different. So we needed to talk about the franchise concept. So what we needed to do for people, and I want you, if you're not in the car right now, to jot this down, we needed to connect the dots for them. We assume sometimes when we're saying something all the time that everybody else knows it. In fact, I want you to think about it, and you might be experiencing this. And this is my question to sales teams out there, certainly sales leadership. Could it be that we get it because we're talking about it all the time in our internal meetings, at company events, certainly the sales meetings, in emails from marketing, conversations with our manager, that, you know, again, we get it, but we get it because we've heard it so many times. It's almost like you ever have a word that you know how to use it, but if somebody really said to you, hey, could you give me the definition of that, you might like struggle a little. I certainly experienced that in music. Let me give you an example. I've been a guitar player forever, and finger picking is something that I can do naturally. I mean, there was a period of time where I studied some classical. My brother was like really big on like folk guitar, and he played a lot of like late 60s stuff and early 70s stuff. I was just like a youngin' back then, and I picked up a lot of stuff. So it's a very natural thing for me. But to break it down, like when I used to teach guitar many years ago when your Uncle Paul had hair, and when I would teach it to people, it took me a little time to like break it down so they would grasp it. I grasped it because I was around it forever, and I was able to naturally do it. It was very intuitive for me. But to stop what you're doing and break it down and deconstruct it so someone else will understand it, that might be what's getting in the way of people grasping your selling proposition, your value proposition, the things that make you different, your pitch, if you will. So that might be one of the things that you want to do, is maybe just learn to break it down a little bit better. Now, going back to that franchise example, the example I always give, what I chose to do, and there's lots of ways for you to help deconstruct it for people, but sometimes we need to dumb things down. But the problem with dumbing things down is that if we do it in an insensitive type of way, certainly improperly, it has a way of making the other person feel dumb, or we're talking down to them. So how can we dumb it down a little bit if there's like kind of a technical aspect of it, of this, or it's a more complicated type of philosophical point that you're trying to get across? Well, what I chose to do was to use kind of like a story slash analogy. So the way that I chose to teach, like that I did it on my own, and then teach my sales team to convey the franchise concept. The franchise concept, just so you know, was basically the fact that we didn't put people in a building after hours where there's sensitive information and things could be stolen and all kinds of, right, all kinds of crazy stuff going on. We didn't just put an hourly employee in there. We put a business owner in there who owned a franchise. Now, there's really not anything about that that's sexy and glamorous and make you say, oh my gosh, that is the best thing in the world anybody's ever said to me about my favorite subject, commercial cleaning. So we needed to dress it up a little bit and put a new suit of clothes on it. So in order to get people to understand the franchise concept, and I know I've given this example a lot on this podcast, so feel free to fast forward if you find yourself going, oh my God, he's going to tell the story again. But for the people in the cheap seats or the newbies to the podcast, I want to say it again. What I would always say to them is I would start with a question. I'd say, did you ever rent a car? And they would say, sure. And I'd say, well, before you brought that car back, did you have it detailed and, you know, nice wash and waxed, at least that? Tune up, oil change, and just bring it back in just pristine condition? They'd go, of course not. And I would say, well, you know, I allow myself one stupid question a day. I promise you, I didn't go and have a liquid lunch. I'm not, you know, like crazy drunk right now. Maybe a little drunk, but, you know, no more than a typical salesperson would be, having to talk about commercial cleaning, ma'am. But my silly question of the day is this. Why didn't you get it tuned up and an oil change and washed and waxed before you brought it back? And they'd say, well, simply because it's not my car. I don't own it. And then I would say to them, and that is why, what makes us different. Because, you know, a car that you own, if you think about it, you're going to take extra special care of it because it's yours. Of course you're going to wash and wax your own car, right? Of course you're going to have it tuned up and the oil changed and do regular maintenance on it. But that's the difference between having an hourly employee who doesn't own what they're doing versus us putting a franchise owner into your business. And then I would end with a question. Who would you trust your keys to? Who would you rather trust your keys to? And it made a big difference. It was that one little tweak. That was one of the things that I did to go from like 60 at that 300 and, I don't know if it was like 350, 375 reps, international reps that we had, to getting up to the top 12 and getting promoted. That was one of the changes that I made. And if you see, I was saying it was the same overall message, but the delivery of it, because I had been around it, I needed to put something out there that everyone could grasp, almost in a silly way, almost like, oh, wow, that sneaky son of a bitch actually just taught me something. Wow, wasn't it? Like, he entertained me. It's like, oh, man, you taught me something. It's got to be like that almost. So that's what I think you might need to do. You might be failing to connect the dots, and you might need to think of a good way to break it down a little bit better. The final thing, we're not going to spend nearly as much time as we need to, is, you know, ask more questions. If you want to have a more effective dialogue in any area of your life, by the way, I don't care if it's with the prospecting. I don't care if it's once you're face-to-face with them. I don't care if it's in your personal life. If you want to have better conversations, ask better questions. It's really that simple. But in a prospecting type of context, I need you to understand something. Questions are not just for information, which, by the way, information is just so important to you as a sales rep, because wouldn't it be great if you and I were so good that we always picked up the phone and it always resulted in an appointment and or a sale? I mean, wouldn't that be amazing if we were that good? But we're not that good. It usually takes several conversations over time. So the way I look at it, and even with emails, several interactions over time, several times and say, not right now, and putting you off and asking questions about this and that. And then when it's time, it's time. Well, imagine if each time you interacted with someone, you were able to figure out another piece of the mystery, have another piece of the puzzle, if you will. That all accumulates over time, and it gives you a powerful amount of information that can be leveraged, that can make you more relevant, that can expedite your deals, certainly expedite the amount of time to get in front of them. But good questions are not only for information, they also, and please, if you're not driving, I want you to jot this down. Great questions also help us to maintain control of the dialogue. Great questions help us to maintain control of the dialogue. The person asking the questions is typically the one in control of the exchange. The one asking the questions is typically the one who's in control of the exchange. Don't be afraid of the word control. Control has a lot of negative vibes, I guess, attached to it. A lot of the time we think of control as being controlling. Two different things. I want you to think more control instead of being controlling or manipulative or sleazy. But wouldn't it be great if we can control that conversation and keep it away from ridiculous, knee-jerk type of objections that they tip? It's like they're auto-ejected. They're going to throw at you just to get you off the phone. And it's not a matter of that they're really not interested. It's just that's what they say, and they get you off the phone. It's not a matter that they already have somebody to take care of whatever it is for them. It's just that's the comfortable thing that they've been saying. But great questions, again, can lead them away from that. Also, I think a great question is going to lead people more on that path of discovery instead of them being the recipient of a pitch. I think there's a huge difference between you arriving at something and me beating you over the head with a pitch. Huge difference. And also, too, I think that when you arrive there, our deal is going to, like, you know, like expedite, like go at light speed, as opposed to me having to pitch you and sell you. Really, really big difference. And last but not least, great questions are also going to get you more responses on your emails. So, pardon me, one of the things I always tell people, end your emails with questions. Start doing that with more of your emails. Watch how much, like, your responses go up. That simple maneuver. So long as it's like a stupid question, like you could have like for them to spell like their name or something, like a lazy question. In fact, I just had somebody ask me a lazy question recently, and I'm like, seriously, man, you're asking me about like what I do when all you had to do was go to my website and right there on the like the front the home page, it was right there. Even if like, you know, like you just like you were like dyslexic and like you struggled with reading or something like that, or maybe you were like you never really graduated like above like the first grade reading level or whatever it is, you could have gotten the information inside of 90 seconds. So I'm not talking about that kind of lazy question. I'm talking about a good question. So there you have it, folks. Again, there's a lot more to this that we could and should be talking about, and we're actually going to be talking about when it comes to having more effective prospecting discussions. We're going to be talking about where to hunt, how to show up differently. Like today, we talked a little bit about that. It's going to be a huge breath of fresh air for the people that you're contacting to have you lead a conversation with something about them for a change. I'm not just talking about a breath of fresh air just from the perspective of you communicating with them. I'm just saying that everything that they get usually starts off with me, with a premier this, with a one source that, me, nothing about them. So we're going to talk about, again, where to hunt, how to show up differently, and how to stand out. And it's going to be during our webinar, Castain's Prospecting Playbook. It's going to be on March 23rd at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. You guys know the deal. If you can't make it live, sign up anyway, because either way, I always deliver it live, and then I send out the webinar replay like an hour later. Now, if you want more info on this, I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyourhunting. yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyourhunting. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.